everyone. Welcome to M4G Advocacy Media. You're watching the Journey Series video podcast. My name is Mark. I'm a brown man with a black and white beard. I'm bald, and today I'm wearing a light blue shirt in front of a brown background.
And I'm Crystal, Mark's co-host, and I'm a white woman with brown hair, brown eyes. Today I'm wearing a red and white striped shirt with a black top.
And today we have the pleasure of speaking with George D. Williams, who's going to tell us a bit about his journey and talking about how his journey with his son who has autism. Hi, George.
Hello. It's
Hi.
good to see you, Mark and Crystal.
Good to
Again,
see you. Welcome.
You too.
thank you. I'm George D. Williams. I'm an author. I live in Denver. My journey is probably not that uncommon for some, but for others, it may be. I received my master's degree in rehabilitation counseling, and I never imagined I would have to draw upon those things with my own son. But our son was diagnosed at age 3. He hit all of the developmental markers from birth up until about 2.5 years old. And my wife's an RN, and she said, "You know, that Nate doesn't seem to make eye contact, or he doesn't play with his toys like his trucks. Instead of rolling them like most kids do, little boys, he would stack them one on top of another and knock them down over and over again. Stack them up, knock them down, stack them up, knock them down." So we went to several doctors, and this was in around 2000, 99 or the year 2000. And we were told things, "Oh, he's fine. I wouldn't worry about it. Boys develop slower than girls. Kids are all different. He seems to be fine. He looks fine. So therefore, he must be fine, right?" But we knew something was going on. Then he stopped talking, and he just started pointing, and he would just grunt and point. He did that for a while, and that's when we knew something was happening. And we went to several doctors. We got the same run around. Finally, one day, a physical therapist at my wife's job, my wife was talking to her, and she said, "Have you had him tested for autism?" And we were both under the belief that all we knew, certainly from my rehab training, was classic autism, severe limitations. And the therapist at that time said, "Oh no, that spectrum is now is what people are focusing on. There are a lot of people on the spectrum who may be functioning in other areas of life, but have some deficits, and they're all included on the autism spectrum." So with that, we had him evaluated by a neuropsychologist who told us, "Oh yes, your son is on the autism spectrum." That was the beginning of our journey. We initially enrolled Nate in the regular schools, and he was reading above his classmates, but he still couldn't tie his shoe. He still was having problems with noise. He was having difficulties assimilating, couldn't handle all the social things, but he was reading on a sixth grade level. So the school thought he was some kind of wonder kid, and they would have him read to other students like fifth and sixth graders. He was in the second grade. We didn't know this was going on. Whenever I picked Nathan up from school, everybody knew him. And one day I said, "Nate, how do you know all of these people?" And the only thing he told me was, "Oh, that's a fifth grader, that's a sixth grader." And it wasn't until we had a parent-teacher conference that we found out they were actually displaying Nathan and his incredible reading ability to older kids as encouragement to them. Well, my wife and I were pretty livid at that point because we said, well, what about Nathan's needs? His needs aren't being addressed
Right.
while you're taking him around to other kids. So we had a decision to make. We felt homeschooling was the best option. At that time, my wife was starting to advance in her career, getting management positions. And so we decided I should be the one. She said, George, I really think you would be best teaching Nathan at home. And we got a lot of resistance from family members. They just couldn't understand why I wasn't out working and my wife was home. And we felt, well, the dynamics in our family is that we feel it's best if we do things the opposite way. So that's how I ended up. I homeschooled Nate, and I was doing freelance writing for businesses, things like marketing and helping them. But I realized our son is an only child, and as I worked with him, it occurred to me who's going to do this as we get older, as he becomes an adult, and as the years go by, what's going to happen to him? So I started writing articles addressing that central theme, who will care for them? And that led to my first book, Who Will Care for Them? And I've written three books now, and I'm currently writing on an ebook on time management and just some daily tips for living for autistic adults. So that's my life in a nutshell, and I'm committed to continue to work and advocate on behalf of adults with autism.
Yeah, it's really difficult when you find out through the grapevine or in person that your child is, they're not addressing your child's needs. They're taking his best qualities, but and using them for their good in that school, but they're not addressing the needs that he is struggling with. That is very, I mean, and that is, what is so important to us is to address all these issues so that maybe people can understand them and know the issues going forward and how are we going to combat that? How are we going to we have advanced so much, but there's just certain things that we don't do, and as humans, we all need to be on the same playing field and understand the issues.
That's a great point, Crystal. As our son got older, his needs, of course, changed. And we weren't concerned about just daily instruction. But we came to the realization that the big picture would entail things like housing for him. That's a major issue for, I know, people with disabilities in general, but certainly the autistic population, because you have to account for all the sensory issues as well as dietary problems. And
Right.
so many adults with autistic have really struggled with diet and all those issues, and as well as employment. And Mark and I were talking previously a little bit about those adults with autism who some are flat out brilliant, but socially they just can't adapt to an office environment, or they need accommodation. Sometimes they're minor, in most cases, they're minor adjustments or accommodations to make them comfortable to the extent that they can be productive. So those are the issues that it's all the silent and invisible factors that impact autistic adults that society, because they can't see them or it's not apparent to them, they don't realize that it is a problem. And that's yeah. why I think advocacy and education are so important.
Very much.
Going back to that that anecdote you were telling about your son being paraded around school and and had to read for fifth and sixth graders, there's an element there which a lot of people in the disability community face, where especially if you have some extraordinary gift which other people don't think you're supposed to have or whatever, it's kind of like a Zeus situation where you're like put on display for other people to admire and gawk and ooh and ah over what you can do. And
we certainly felt that way, Mark. We were angry because no one told us this was going on first, mm-hmm. but we felt exactly that way, that our son was being displayed, but his mm-hmm. issues weren't being addressed. It was let's just focus on, we've got this kid that reads above grade level. That's then I suppose that is somewhat of a rarity in this day and age among children. But by the same token, he had issues with speech delay and other mm-hmm. concerns and socialization, mm-hmm. things that we were concerned about. Although he was receiving PT and OT through the school, mm-hmm. he just wasn't getting what he needed from the classroom. He just didn't fit into that classroom. And mm-hmm. every day we had to coax him to go to school. And it just got to be an ongoing battle every morning. I drop him off and I just remember the look on his face as I dropped him off and he'd go into that classroom. It's as though he just froze, and I'd leave thinking, and I'd just tell him every day, have a good day. And there was a lot going on behind the scenes.
And on the dealing with autism, the media does not do us justice at all, because like just speaking about the show, what was it called, the one with the doctor,
the good doctor.
Yeah. Like that in particular shines a light on his savant autism kind of things, and that shows like the awesomeness that it showed a little bit of the other things that he had to deal with, but I think it magnetized the awesomeness, and everybody like gravitated to that and took away from that and then maybe used it on the general population and thought, okay, now if we find somebody with autism, they're gonna have these awesome qualities, and we don't have to work with all their other qualities, and there's certainly a whole bunch of other shows that I can talk about, but that one I think didn't help at all for autism.
That's exactly right. That was my wife and I, that was our take on that show also. That, and unfortunately, what happens is a lot of the general population think all autistic people are gifted or savants or have some awesome capabilities. But the reality is most people with autism fall probably right in the middle. They have different deficits and different strengths, but most people are typical or typical in the sense of having average abilities, and their sensory issues vary and differ, but they are not severely limited, but they're not superhuman either.
So, as far as your son goes, you mentioned that he's mostly nonverbal?
No, he does speak. His speech is delayed. He has delayed speech, but he does articulate for the most part. That's how he communicates now. He's an artist. He loves animation, loves his computer and animation, and smooth jazz. He won't listen to any other music other than smooth jazz. But that's kind of where he is now. He does his animation. He works part-time. My wife has a home healthcare consulting business. So Nate and I go in 3 days a week and we work there and he helps her out. And he loves doing the, whenever she has a project, he loves doing music in the background and helping her with the artistic end of things. So that's kind of his life right now.
And I know this is an issue with the other people with autism. Is he able to communicate his feelings and tell like, or is what's the level of communication there?
Regarding his feelings,
Yeah.
yeah, it's difficult. It's very difficult to. For him to express his feelings and to connect. And that's the area where we had so much difficulty with family members because they didn't understand and they couldn't, or in some cases wouldn't, attempt to understand him. They didn't understand, well, why can't he just do certain things? Or why can't he? And we'd explain to them, and we'd just tell them, well, that's a part of his autism. And I think they were still perplexed and still didn't understand. And in a lot of cases, we left it on that note, them not understanding and us moving on.
Yeah, that is so difficult. I would like to go back to you was talking about doing the research for your book.
Yes.
You talked about doing the research, and the conversation we had was starting out was about who's gonna take care of my son. And that was you and your wife's conversation, and then you started doing research for the book. And like I asked you before, what was the hardest part in that, finding those realizations within that? Because I know there's a lot within that that's so difficult to try to tackle.
It's a lot to unpack, to say the least. The most difficult part for me was discovering just how few resources there are, especially for adults. And just going back to your example, Crystal, of the one show with the autistic doctor. That in itself is odd because usually the media focuses on kids. All the attention is on autistic children. And I support early intervention and early diagnoses. but there's hardly anything for adults in terms of resources and attention. The extent that I found for adults was the annual walk for autism. There's an annual event where there's a fundraiser. It's a 5K run slash walk event. Other than that, there was nothing for adults. So what I did was I just started talking to nonprofits and getting feedback and family members or families that I knew of. And as I started writing, people started responding to me on social media and people from all over the world. I started getting followers from the UK and Australia and Canada, and that just shocked me that the same thing is going on with people worldwide. That as parents, we all feel we're getting older and nothing's being done, and our kids are in their 20s, 30s, and we know 40s and 50s are coming. Will we still be there? And if we are, what will our health be like? And just a whole gamut. And that's once I started getting that, the ball really started rolling as I got feedback from other people.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot, and that's like now discussing the issues, so that we can understand and build a better world because our kids are going to grow up. We're going to get older
Yes.
and need the compassion and the human experiences. We need them all to be understood, to advance things so that people are on the same level in several areas. And I feel like if those things aren't addressed first, it's gonna just be on a perpetual over and over and over again kind of thing,
Yeah, that's right. It has to be addressed, and there we certainly have come a long way. There are steps being taken now where people are beginning to use the political system to impact change or to bring about change, but as we know, that's a long, tedious process.
Oh my goodness.
And that's kind of the state of autism now. It's educating and advocating and trying to connect with the people who create laws and who have the power to bring about change. But it's there are a lot of hoops to jump through, and it's ongoing.
And same here, not wanting to make things political, but at the same time, being able to discern the people that are trying to not be accountable for situations and learning the ones that are actually trying to make things help things go forward and not divide the country in different parties and different races. And
Yeah.
like we talked about previously,
Sure.
all the isms, stop trying to divide things or, be the solution, not the problem.
Yes.
And it must be tremendously scary in some ways because, like, we know even for people that are not disabled, it can be a real struggle to find employment or get ahead or do what you need to do to survive for yourself and for your family, and take all those for someone that's disabled or incapable of caring for themselves totally, and that's just like an impossible mountain to climb.
For sure. And the, you know, there's also Mark and I have talked many times, you know, it's just a matter of being able to have conversations like we're having, and for people to get on the same page about all the issues that have held people back, you know, and that's gonna take time. It's not
Yes.
gonna happen overnight, you know.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of people that have built ways of life and are comfortable and afraid of not having those comforts. And people are gonna fight back not to be able to hold on to those comforts. And you know, and so we just have to have patience, but it's, you know, but it's something we are determined to do, you know.
Yes. You, I mean, you know, Crystal, and you talked a little bit just going back to, you mentioned all the isms we discussed in our previous talk, but you know, sometimes we, it seems as though I feel that there are people who are incentivized to continue creating divisions and creating the isms and creating separations rather than bringing or promoting unity. And sadly, it happens on so many divisions, whether it's socially, economically, racially, ethnically, and you know, our world is so diverse, but in so many ways with each new achievement or each new step up, there's a new schism created or a new ism as a result of the accomplishment. As sometimes I tell my wife, you know, when we were in college in the 70s, in a lot of ways, I know college environments are isolated and not a true depiction of the real world, but we were a lot better in the 70s for all the problems we had during that time than we are today. So we have to continue, just keep pushing and finding and networking with and communicating with like-minded people. That's so important.
Yeah, Crystal and I have been talking a lot lately about things like ancient civilizations and stuff like that. And you know, we're in some regards, it's very much in some circles, it's very much, oh, look how far we've come, look at all our technological advancements and all that, which are certainly true. But in some ways, like spiritual ways and ways of being a community, and we have fallen backwards and lost or forgotten those things that made certain cultures great historically.
For sure. Yeah, we've gotten away from, we've fallen to looking to other people, the government, you know, people of higher power, to tell us how to think and stuff like that. And we've forgotten how to look within ourselves and internally be able to discern things and figure things out, what's right, wrong, and just loving people for their soul, not for the color of their skin or any other ism. So.
Yes. I apologize if you hear the loud noises. There's some construction going on outside my window.
No, can't hear it. It's
Okay,
fine.
great. But you and I certainly believe in law and order and the government and civil obedience. But there is a dependency, and oftentimes within the disabled community, and Mark and I alluded to this earlier, where that there is an overdependence on government and governmental resources. And unfortunately, it has influenced people to become so dependent because that they actually can't think for themselves anymore. And in terms of creativity and originality, that I just can't think of creativity. I don't look to the government as a source of creativity and innovation. That has to come from people. It's within all of us, and we have to express that and develop that.
Yeah, we've definitely, Mark and I, we see all these issues and want to not so much fix things, but be a part of the solution, you know? And in that, we want to get away from the government, you know, and be able to provide for ourselves. And at the same time, trying to help other situations, you know. It is sad, though, because it feels, or it's very apparent, actually, that the government forces people on a lot of levels to be totally dependent on the government, whether you understand that or not, you know, it's really sad. But if you do the research and understand the psychological things, you know, and tell them that, then it's easy to follow, you know, how that happens.
That's how the whole system kind of works. In order to, it's just like a business, of supply and demand, they have to create this demand or this dependency in order to provide the solution for it.
Right. That's something in psychology. You know, they have to create the problems so they can fix the problem. I can't stand that. But okay, sure.
And then that justifies their re-election or continued support or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah. That's right.
So do you want to tell us, George, a bit more about maybe a bit more details about your ebook and the book you're working on?
Sure. I've written, this is my fourth book that I've written. I'll go back. My second book is entitled Mount Up with Wings, and it's the journey of finding purpose for autistic adults. And that book deals with the other part of the equation, which is the rest of society, because I don't feel any solution towards creating a better life or a better experience for autistic adults is a one-way street. There has to be a mutual collaborative effort. And for the rest of us, that book talks about typical adults making an attempt to understand people with autism, whether it's volunteering, whether it's just visiting the kid down the street that maybe a family has an autistic child. just trying to get to know them on an individual level as a person, what things they do well, what things upsets them. And I always use the example of pets. For example, there are autistic people who love pets, who will do anything for pets, and some have no filter. They'll embrace a wild animal because they see it as a pet. Others, like my son, have phobias. One of his phobias is pets. We had a dog before Nathan came along, and once he reached a certain age, we realized he was fearful of our dog. And he told us once, we tried to understand, and he was younger then. We tried to understand, what is it about our dog that makes you fearful? And he said, I don't know what he's going to do. That shed some light on the situation for us, is the unpredictability and things that he doesn't understand that are unpredictable creates anxiety for him. So those types of situations, I implore people, the general public, to try to understand an autistic person's point of view. I also wrote an ebook on women and autism, and that deals with girls, adolescents, and young women specifically. And the big takeaway from that, and Mark and I were saying, that girls and women tend to be more socially advanced in a lot of instances than autistic males. They're able to mask, and masking is such a big issue with the autism community, where they are able to blend in because it's not a visible disability. But girls and women are especially good at it. And as a result, so many women on the spectrum go undiagnosed. Oftentimes, they're not diagnosed for the first time until they're 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. That happens so many times, and all their lives they've been wearing this mask, and they've been very good at just going along, fitting into the crowd, but they suffer emotionally because they have so much pain and so many problems that they are covering up, and eventually it just manifests. The book I'm writing on now, it's kind of a broad range view of life itself, and it offers tips, suggestions based on my research experience being the dad of an autistic adult, young adult, and it's specifically for autistic adults, things that you can fight, and just knowing when to pick your battles. There's some things you need to just, over time, develop wisdom enough to walk away from. There are others that people should engage in and really fight for. And I'll just use one example, and that's self-advocacy. Bullying is such a big problem for autistic adults. We hear about it for kids in the school, but it continues throughout their life. Bullying, of course, takes on many forms, but for autistic adults, they have to develop the courage to speak up, to speak for those that can speak up for themselves. Don't just be a doormat. Don't let people walk on you, and don't accept things that you know are not right. If there are inequities, then speak out against them, and not just verbally. Write letters, join groups, interact with fellow adults who are autistic. In short, just get involved and be involved. I think everybody can do something. It doesn't have to be something that's life-changing or monumental, that it draws media attention. But if everyone gets involved to the extent that they can, that will start the wheels to turn to bring about the change that we want.
Right.
Yeah, we were when we were talking before Georgia, we an analogy, and how do you say wheels to turn, because we were talking about it can be hard as someone advocating, but if we don't keep putting that coal in the I don't know what do they call that in trains, Crystal? I forget. But if we
Whatever,
don't, where they put the coal, I guess the oven or whatever, or the engine, if we don't keep doing that on a consistent basis, the train's not going to be able to keep going.
oh yes, we were talking about the old trains, the steam engine trains, where shoveling
Oh.
coal was a necessary part. And one of the we had a very interesting discussion, Mark and I, and we used that analogy of an old steam engine train. I don't know how we gravitated toward that, Mark, but somehow we related. But we mentioned the fact that if the person shoveling the coal is doing that by himself or herself, they tire out and grow weary. But if there's a team, someone else can shovel the coal and take
Right.
some of the burden and share that
Right.
burden. It keeps
Yeah.
the train going, and it doesn't wear the one person, wear them
Yeah.
out.
I like that analogy. And it kind of goes back to exactly what happened and why you guys were having that conversation. It's because I was busy doing counseling work. And so y'all were having that conversation. So he was like, putting coals in the fire until I was in the conversation. So, yeah, I like that.
And I suppose I use that one because I know Crystal likes trains, and I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, that analogy comes to mind, but there's nothing like a good analogy, I find. Yeah, but so what else do you have going on, George?
Occasionally, I speak to groups. I'm invited to speak, and I'm available to speak to groups. I'm really targeting right now, and haven't been able to reach that particular sector of the autism community, but young adults who are in college. There are more and more students who are autistic, and schools, colleges, and universities are open to enrolling students with autism. In fact, many schools now have a support program in place specifically for those students, where there's a mentor, a peer mentor, to assist them with the areas they may have challenges in, like socialization or time management. Attending a sporting event if possible, or just going out for pizza. All the experiences that are routine as a part of the college experience. So I'm really interested in addressing those young adults, because I'm curious to know what their thoughts are regarding the future and how they perceive their future and what things they'd like to see change, and some of the obstacles they're observing.
I'm curious about your take on this. We had another parent on here for her autistic son, and we had brought up the conversations in the autism community, and the hashtag actually autistic. And we talked about the harmful, sometimes harmful nature that can be, like and causing further division between the autistic community. You're not really autistic,
Yes,
because
yes.
you're older when you were diagnosed. How do you feel about that?
It can be I guess my position on that is it can be divisive, and my personal belief is to not get too caught up in the terminology and labels. And labels. And that's one of the big things that we've always encouraged our son is not to get too wrapped up in being autistic, because you're an individual, you have incredible abilities. By the same token, you have some areas, some deficit areas, and that's just who you are. Labels notwithstanding. So my position is I don't really focus too much on those labels, and I know it has been a source of contention for a lot of folks within the autism community.
Yes. Us too, we normally don't like the whole label thing, and it's just, first of all, we talked about this earlier, is let's focus on the bigger issues and getting away from all the isms, racism, ableism, all the others, and then maybe later on, definitely if we need to address the labels and how they're talked about, fine. But let's tackle one thing at a time,
I just have had a thought before I forget. But when I wrote my first book and was initially doing research, I remember calling the director of a nonprofit, and we talked briefly on the phone. And at the time, my son was 16, and she said, "Oh, I also have a 16-year-old son." And so we set up an appointment, and she was kind of short, and she said, "I can give you 15 minutes, George. That's all I can spare." And I said, "Oh, that's fine. That's all I need." So we met. She did most of the talking, but we ended up talking for an hour and a half. And we shared so much. And for the first time, our sons, I know my son is very reserved and somewhat shy, but he and that other 16-year-old son played video games. And they never looked at each other, but they just, her son would say, "Oh, it's your turn. Oh, you did great." My son would say, "Oh, good job." But they never looked at each other. And I remember them sitting there in his room playing video games, not making eye contact. But in my mind, they were communicating. So they were communicating and just having a great time. I enjoyed talking to his mom, and she just went on, and it was just such an enjoyable experience. So I would just encourage parents to talk to other parents. And a lot of times people will say, "But my daughter is nonverbal," or "My son is nonverbal." It doesn't mean they can't communicate. There's so many other ways to communicate other than using words. Thought I'd throw that in.
Yeah, that's an important point. Going back to the labels thing, and which obviously is the way we used to com I mean, language is the way we used to communicate, and sometimes that's expressed through labels. And like anything else, language and labels are tools. And we can either use them correctly and for a good purpose, or we can misuse them and use them to oppress people and isolate them and all that other stuff. So we have to be really careful with how we use them. Yeah, there's so many examples we could use of Language is useful for describing things like this is a certain color shirt, or that's a certain color shirt, or even up to people. This is a certain color person, that's a certain color person. They look like this, but going beyond that is really unnecessary.
Right. It's definitely indicative of if your purpose is to use that language to further divide humanity, then, Gordy,
Got
that
some other language for you if that's the case.
yeah.
One of the other things, Mark, you asked what I'm doing now. I'm really promoting and really big on young adults on with autism, and I kind of focus on young adults because they've got the future and they can create, in my mind, to some extent, the world they want to have. But for them to have a healthy sense of self and sense of worth, and their self-esteem is so important, while at the same time embracing their autism, because shame is often discussed in the autism community. People talk about being ashamed of being autistic because they have internalized this negativity to the extent that they don't feel that they are worthy, or they have value, or they have immeasurable gifts to share. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm really encouraging and promoting self-esteem and having a healthy self-image.
Right.
That's great to hear, George. You talked about bullying as being a real problem, and I'm wondering what your experience in talking to other people with autism who maybe have been masking for a long time, and how that bullying is internalized, and how they can sometimes dismiss themselves and bully themselves for and feel bad about things. What do you have to say about that?
And talking to people who have been masking for a long time, first of all, it's exhausting. It takes a lot of energy to just keep up a front and not to be authentic. So it's as though they've been just carrying dead weight for years, just carrying this weight that I feel is unnecessary. And a lot of people are reaching a point of a breakthrough where they can finally just say, ah, oh, it's a, I don't have to carry this burden just to feel worthy. So that's the first thing. It's just a lifting a burden or a weight from their shoulders. And then they feel that they do have something to offer, just sharing their experience or sharing their gifts, whether it's artistic or music or whatever, creativity. They feel that there is value in it. But the bullying and the demeaning, how that shows up by internally is people accept less than, and in terms of where they live, they in terms of relationships, that it's okay to leave an abusive relationship. You don't have to stay there simply because, well, I don't have options as an autistic person. So, and people of course rationalize, well, my partner doesn't hit me. They just verbally abuse me and demean me. So it shows up in what people are willing to put up with and accept as being normal. It's become their unfortunate normal.
Right. And if we can talk a little bit more about masking, it's not a new concept. Not just the disability community.
Right.
And yes, that is the trending phrase, you know, the whole masking thing. But no, that is something we've been told all our lives as a human race, that we need to hide all our flaws or hide a blemish. You know, we literally throw makeup on our face and cover up everything, you know. And put a mask on. You know, so if you think about the concept of somebody having a disability here, and not being given the opportunity because if they look different, they're different race, or they talk different or move, whatever. If they're not going to be given the same opportunities as a person with a disability or whatever, to be able to given the same rights as the rest of the human race, then it makes sense for survival mode to go into that. I'm sorry, to go into that mode so that you can be given those opportunities.
Yes, yes. Very good point. That's
exactly funny you brought that up, because George and I were talking about that before you got here. But living in historically a male dominated society, women have had to mask for a long time. Right, just to get by. And I'm sure, obviously, there are different marginalized groups, like minorities and other groups that have had to do the same thing.
Yeah,
just to conform. Basically, the message you get non-verbally, it's just you have to conform in order to succeed.
Anything else, Mark?
No, I don't think so.
How about George? Anything else you want to promote or talk about?
Just my ebook. I was telling Mark that it seems as though all of just little distractions are coming up. I'm trying to finish this book, but it's just life. Things are just coming up, but I plan to have that finished within the next few weeks here. And I also am planning to have that in an ebook as well as an audiobook format. Yeah, so hopefully I'll be promoting that, especially during the holiday season.
Right, keep us posted and we'll make sure that we get that out there as well.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time today, George, and telling us about your story.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, have a good day.
Okay.